Hey everyone, welcome back to Life is the Pits podcast, the show where we celebrate the wild, wonderful, and sometimes totally chaotic world of dogs. I'm your host, Marla, and today I'm joined by someone who knows all about turning canine chaos into calm, Kat, the amazing dog trainer behind KDT. Whether you're dealing with a new puppy, a stubborn senior, or just trying to understand your dog's behavior a little better, you're going to want to hear what Kat has to say. We're diving into training tips, common misconceptions, and how to build a better communication between you and your pup. So grab a coffee, cuddle up with your dog, and let's get into it.
It's perfect.
I feel like you're like me in a way where dogs are your people.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have four dogs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. My house has been a revolving door of dogs since we moved to Bonnyville because I volunteer at the SPCA and I bring home foster dogs. And my husband is just like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? Like, you have a problem. You have a hoarding problem of animals. And I was like, oh, I'm like, I know. I'm so sorry. And then this year I decided that I was going to retire from dog training. I had enough. Yeah. I love the dogs. Like I love working with the dogs because they're so fun, but it's the people. Like I can't do it anymore. I just can't. People are so crazy. And I'm like, and I'm not that kind of crazy. I'm like my dogs, I love them dearly, but they're dogs nonetheless. And they get disciplined and, you know, like I don't smack them or anything like that, but I will use tone and I will, you know, put a leash on them, put them on their beds and stuff like that. Like, I just don't tolerate any shit. But yeah. my dogs are assholes too. Like, they're, you know.
Oh,
like,
all dogs are.
I'm like, you know what? You're an asshole today. Chris.
Yeah, like, I do that all the time.
And I'm like, I don't know. Pick one. They're all the same.
I do that. But I say the same thing about Piper. Like, she is such a, like, she's a sweetheart. She's a little pit bull. She's just over a year now. And I say the same thing. I'm like, you are being a complete colossal shithead right now.
Yeah.
And she looks at me like, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, what are you going to do about it? Hmm? Yeah, that's true. Oh, Pixie was the one that passed away, isn't she? I'm so sorry. It was Piper that I was listening to on your podcast. Yeah, I'm so sorry. That's so hard.
With her diary, her Piper diary.
Yeah. Yeah, I was listening to that yesterday. I was like, oh, that's so cute.
I thought it was just funny because everyone has those weird things about the puppies. You know how puppies do shitty things.
Yeah.
And I know, and it's really funny because I know 9 times out of 10 why she does it is because I didn't do something. I did something wrong or didn't do something right. You know what I mean? Like I left something too close to the edge of the counter and she grabbed it. I forgot to put my shoe up on the, you know, up in up in the closet and close the door and she grabbed it, you know, like that's so, and I think a lot of people don't realize that a lot of the puppy bad actions is because you forgot to do the good action first.
You know, I always say there's no bad dog. There's just bad owners. And I am the epitome. I am a dog trainer. I know everything to do except with my own dogs. I need a dog trainer. Do you know any good dog trainers? Because my dogs are horrible.
Oh, you know, I find it so funny to me too. Like, I mean, because Pixie was a pit bull cross. She's a pit bull shepherd cross. Mm-hmm. And I have to tell you, like, I was so scared sometimes when I would take her to the dog park because other people didn't do stuff with her dog, with their dogs.
Yep.
And I was so nervous because Pixie being a pit bull, quote unquote, cross.
Yeah.
She would be the one getting the blame for it.
Yep.
And that always scared the hell out of me. And especially you have these people with the little dogs who don't do anything with their little dog. They're like, well, I can just pick it up and walk away. What? That's not the point.
Me and one of my friend dog trainers, actually, we were in Leduc one day and we were walking our dogs. I had a Tritey, my border collie cross. And this lady was coming up to us with her little chihuahua and she picked up her dog and her dog was, oh my God, red hair. What's her name? Anyway, doesn't matter. Her dog was 80 pounds. My dog was 50 pounds.
Like an Irish setter kind of dog?
No, her dog was just mutt.
Okay.
And my dog was just border collie cross.
Right.
And so we looked at each other and we picked our dogs up And we walk by this lady, she's carrying her 80-pound dog and I'm carrying my 50-pound dog. And we walk by and the lady's looking at us, like just glaring. And we're like, well, I guess that's what you do when you go by other dogs. You pick up your dog. Like, we just razzed her. It was so bad.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, but it's that kind of stuff, right? Like when I owned my facility in Edmonton, I said to my clients, I said, please do not take your dogs to the dog park. I said, it's lazy man's training. And I said, and your dog's going to get into fights because your dog is behaving yourself. And then another dog comes over and tries to fight your dog or roll your dog or, you know, whatever, like just stay away from them. Like they're a battleground of bad dogs and bad dog owners.
Yeah. And I have to admit, I took Pixie there for a couple, maybe the first year of her life, I took it just because I wanted to meet other people who had dogs. Like that was my whole plan, which I found really good people to go walking with. And we ended up going walking outside of the park. So that was good. But then I found that Pixie became kind of a resource guarder for toys. And so then I was like, people would bring toys and they just throw them around and not do anything to, you know what I mean? Like, don't bring toys to the dog park.
Yeah, right.
With other dogs around because that's, you can start a fight with that.
Yeah. Like that's, you want to go play fetch in a school field or something.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like not at the dog park.
I'm with you. I used to take my dogs to the dog park faithfully. And I just, you know, my late husband took my little Aussie Storm to the dog park one day. And there was a man there with two hunting dogs and they kept chasing him and rolling him.
Oh.
And John called him and Storm, he's just a little guy. Mm-hmm. And he was running for his life, man. And I have this command for them to go middle when they don't feel safe because I use two of my dogs in training. Mm-hmm. And so I say, so John says middle, Storm goes into middle and these two dogs came over and kept trying to butt him and trying to get him to come out. And John just lost it on this guy. And he says, what? They're just playing. And John's like, they're not just playing. Like they're trying to hurt this animal. And he's like, oh, whatever, F-O. And I said to John, I said, please don't ever take my dogs to the dog park again. That was the end of it for me. I was like, my dogs, they're herders. They get their... So I know your podcast is about like, you know, what kind of dog should you get for your family? And I know my breed of choice is Australian Shepherds. And, you know, you have to feed them that motivation. And so they get their playtime with me in the way that they need it, like as Australian Shepherds. And then I have two labs. The one, our newest one, we adopted her from the SPCA and she's dumb as a sack of hammer handles. But I love her dearly because she brings such a kid-like energy to our house, which we need. You know, we need some playful energy in the house. And I ended up putting her on an e-collar because she wouldn't stop jumping up. So, yeah. They're retrievers. So yeah. We play a lot of fetch with them. And although Storm and Odin love playing fetch too, Whip It is a way better game for them because it stimulates that prey drive in their brains. And sometimes they catch the prey, sometimes they don't. And so it's a lot of fun, you know. So if you can stimulate your dogs, because pit bulls, you know, like they would be really good for tug of war you know, or a game that they could use their power, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, people just don't think about that. I used to do pre-pet counseling, but honestly, Marla, it was rare that I ever got a client for pre-pet counseling. I would get clients who'd be like, oh, I adopted a Malinois and they're like a Chinese couple. And oh yeah, I adopted a Malinois from a breeder in Saskatchewan. And I was like, oh, I'm like, did you do any research on the Malinois? And they're like, no, but he was so cute. And I was like, and now he's biting people because he's a working dog. He should be sniffing out drugs in a airport, not living in a kennel and having a walk for 30 minutes a day. Like, exactly. I'm just like, and I said to them after doing training, because it was a board and train, and I said to them, I said, honestly, you guys, I said, he's not the right fit for you. Like, he's not. You would be best to rehome this dog responsibly and then find yourself a shih tzu.
Yeah.
And they were like, no, we want to keep him. And I was like, okay, so here's the program. And not even 6 months later, they phoned me and they said, we need to rehome the dog because he just bit he just bit a jogger. And I was like, shocker.
Yeah, exactly. Surprising. Shocker. I want to get you to share. You'll probably have to share that again because I'm going to start recording right away.
Oh, okay. Well, you let me know when you're ready. And can we please stay in touch now? Because I just love you.
Yes, absolutely. I was kind of thinking I might get you to be a guest several times because this would be awesome because like right now, like I'm kind of aiming just right now for the family and education kind of sector.
Yeah.
So I just want like people to be responsible. Like I'm heading up rescue. So like maybe if you have a contact at the SPCA in Bonneville who might want to come on the show or something too, that would be awesome because
they totally would. They totally would. Yeah.
Because that's what I want. Like I want it to be about all types of dogs. Like I call it Life is the Pits because my girls are all pit bulls.
Yeah,
that's the only reason.
But Life is the Pits with dogs sometimes too. They're kind of like exactly. Children. You got to take care of their
exactly
own life.
That's exactly what it is. That's a dual message. Okay. So I'm going to start it right now.
Okay.
Don't have to worry about. Do you want me just to call you Cat?
Just call me Cat. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't go by Kathy anymore. Not for years and years and years and years, but yeah. And you edit anyway, right? So
yeah,
if I
absolutely
say the F word accidentally, because I am prone to that word.
Yeah. But, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I'll be like, oh, sorry, darn it.
Okay, so now we're starting. Okay, so I'm going to do a read into it. And sure. So do you want to just introduce yourself to everybody?
Hey, everybody. My name is Kat, the dog trainer. I am recently retired from the industry, but I do have a fair amount of knowledge that I could share with everybody on training dogs, helping dogs in ways that they need for their personalities, etc. I'm not a behaviorist. I'm a trainer. However, there is an overlap in both of those sectors where we need to be aware of our energy, the dog's energy, and what they need at any given time. So I can give quite a bit of advice on that. So we'll see what kind of questions Marla has for me for you.
That's right. That's great. Thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Okay.
So you've had so many years of experience. I don't mean to sound so many, but I just want to know what inspired you to get into dog training?
You know, I don't know if you recall years ago, I had that little dog Pepper.
Yes.
And so I got her when I was about 5 or 6, I think. And she literally was my first dog that I trained. And I just loved that little dog to death. And when I moved out of home, I got my second dog. And I honestly can't even tell you how many dogs I've had since then. Many, many, many. And all of them so different in personality. Because when you lose a dog and then you get another dog, you think like, oh, you know, this dog is going to be the same. And then we actually start comparing. And, you know, that we always seem to attract the dog that we need in our life at any given time. And so even though we might adopt the same type of dog, that dog is a totally different personality because we're a totally different personality. So it's pretty interesting, the dog in your mirror, that connection there, which I can get into maybe in another podcast. But for years and years, I went to college, dropped out. I worked retail for years. And then I got into life coaching and I did a whole bunch of like certifications and stuff, became a life coach for about 12 years. And I was like, I really want to be a dog trainer. I have these animals that are just so amazing. And, you know, people would say, oh, there's no money in it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so that really discouraged me from chasing that dream. But once I retired from doing the life coaching, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to give it a go. And so I put a shingle on my door and just, hey, I'm taking clients for dog training. And I had no formal training at all myself. I just knew from reading books and, you know, working with my own dogs. And here I am 14 years in the industry as my dog Odin starts barking.
Hey. He's making a guest appearance on the podcast.
He's making a guest appearance. Yeah. So yeah, after 14 years in the industry, I decided that I was going to pull the pin on that just because I needed to do something a little bit different. The world has changed so much since COVID. And I just decided to put a shingle on my door. And then all of a sudden I ended up with a business partner. And then we worked together for 8 years and we developed this big, beautiful business. And you know, there's something to be said about do what you love and call it work. And that song, that country song, And that was my life for a long, long time. And dogs never cease to amaze me on what they can bring to you at any given time, whatever it is that you need or what you think you don't need at the time they bring to you, which is really fascinating if you dove into the psychology part of it.
I find it amazing, like for me, like anytime you're going through a bad day, like your dog makes it better. You know what I mean? Like it's a great thing. And to have somebody like you who can help you make that companionship even better is always, always amazing. So that's
really and great. It's funny because people don't really realize what that connection is, right? They, you know, especially first time dog owners, and they're like, oh, I got this dog. And, you know, they don't realize their responsibility necessarily with the energy that they give their dog, with, you know, how they talk to their dog. You know, I have four dogs in my home and every single one of them has a different personality and every single one of them has to be dealt with differently. Like the dog that was just barking here a minute ago, his name is Odin. We call him Little Bum or O. He's, you know, I gave him a strong name because he's a very submissive dog. And that energy, I feel, has helped him become like more assertive. And, but yet if I yell or if I discipline him in a fashion that is aggressive, he shuts down. Right. And he just, you know, but if I dealt with my dumb lab Harper, she would just jump on me and go, what? And stick her tongue out at
me. Say that again, I dare you.
Exactly. And so, you know, you really have to check in with your own emotions, especially when they do something bad, and how they respond to you. Do they respond to you in fear? Do they respond to you, you know, in likeness? Like what, you know, you really have to focus on how your temperament is affecting your dog, not the other way around, because it really does start with you.
Yeah. It was interesting to me when you watch people who work with their dog, like, you know, there's all these people that, whether at the park or you see them walking by and they're like doing stuff, you can tell that they're practicing, you know what I mean? Like they're practicing with leads or whatever. And I find that really interesting because I'm always like, are you getting training? Are you doing that on your own? Like where, you know, that's amazing that people do that. And I think, I mean, personally, what I've seen for with dogs are people who make that effort or make that connection, you know, either reach out to you or like how you did it with, you know, doing the research and trying stuff on their own. Uh-huh. I think they have a better result, you know, a better relationship with their pup, right?
So they 100% do. And as my career progressed, I took training through some of the best trainers in the world, really. Like one of my mentors is Heather Beck with Canine Lifeline down in Draper, Utah. And she was my mentor for a lot of years because I ran a daycare, boarding facility, grooming and training. I had 14 staff, you know, we're running, you know, hundreds of dogs through a week, sometimes like more than 100 dogs a day. And, you know, you have to be safe, right? So so I took on a mentor and it was the best thing I ever did was learning, you know, from the best of the best. So if you want to be the best, you need to train with the best. And I had one of the top dog facilities in Edmonton at the time. And we ran a really tight ship, but the people that took the initiative to get training, took the initiative to work on their own, you know, there's the foundation and the fundamentals of dog training where, you know, you build that relationship and that bond, but then you sometimes have to go a little bit further because even when you build that foundation, sometimes that particular dog does things that are out of the norm. And then the owner is like, I'm at a loss. I don't really know what to do. And then that's when you might reach out to a trainer because you can go to the self-help section and chapters, but there's going to be a chapter on every behavior and which one fits your dog. You don't really know.
Right. And the way they're, and the reason they're doing that might be different from dog to dog, right? Like the same 100%. Action might be, yeah, the same action may be occurring, but dog A may be doing it because of this. Yeah. That's interesting.
100%. Yeah.
Okay, so now I have a question for you now about, because you had a lot of dogs in your facility. Did you notice that different breeds, like different types of dogs, had to have like a different training plan? Yeah. Or was there, is that true that they had to have something a little different for each breed?
Yeah, so we had a program, right? So you start off with your program. This is what we're going to do. So we're going to start with this. We're going to start with this, you know, and then you kind of like have a, you kind of have like a step by step, right? Especially when you're training new trainers. And you're like, hey, we're going to start with this and then this and then this. But then dog training is like a puzzle. You know, one time you put that 1,000-piece puzzle together, it goes this way. But then the next time you do that puzzle, it's going to go together totally different. And so I look at dog training like a puzzle being built, and not every piece is going to fit. And so, you know, my trainers would say, okay, this dog is not doing this well, like, what do we do? And you have to modify that for that dog. And then we would always take notes on that dog of what we did a little bit differently so that we could pass that on to the client, because that dog had a stubborn streak, or that dog would shut down, you know, if there was any spatial pressure applied to it, or, you know, it's not a one size fits all, 100%. It's not. And you have to be able to shift your focus and shift your thinking, and even, you know, reach out to somebody and say, this is happening. This is what I was told, or this is what I was read. This is what I read. Like, what can I do differently with this dog? And I'm pretty no BS. Like, I'm like, you know what? I will tell you if there's a problem, or I will tell you if this dog isn't the right fit, or I will tell you, you know, what it is that you need to do, tough love, whatever, to make things better between you and your dog.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of fit there, and I know you helped with pre-dog ownership, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so, like, what advice do you give people who, you know, maybe never had a dog, on they want to get a dog? So if I came to you, Kat, I've never had a dog in my life, which we all know is false, because how many dogs have been in my life, right? But if so, I came to you and I wasn't sure. I knew I wanted a dog because I like dogs. But so what would you start with? Like, how would the process start in trying to find me the perfect fit of a dog?
Well, the first thing that I would do is ask you a bunch of questions. So, like, what's your lifestyle? How long are you home? Will you crate train? Will you follow through on commands? You know, are you looking for a couch potato? Or are you looking for an athlete? You know, what kind of lifestyle do you live, right? Like, if you live a fairly sedentary lifestyle, you might not want to own a boxer, or a Boston Terrier. I say Boston Terrier, but a Boston Terrier. You may not want, you know, the Fraser dog, whatever that dog is.
Yeah.
You know, Jack, like, you, yeah, Jack Russell, like, they are like bing, bing, bing. And even though they say, like, big dogs wouldn't fit in an apartment or this or this, you know, like, I would take a Jack Russell Terrier and say that dog is not good for an apartment living unless you're a very active person. Right. Now, a Great Dane, on the other hand, I might say, you know, definitely an apartment dog. Just make sure that you have a couch long enough for them. Yes. And, you know, because a Great Dane has a very small heart, and they don't live very long. They only live 8 to 10 years because of their size to what their internal organs are. And so, and they're couch potatoes. Like, they don't need more than a 10-15 minute walk a day, you know, and they're certainly not going to pull your arm off chasing another dog because they just don't have it in them, you know.
It's so, what they say with the English Mastiff too, don't they? Like, they're kind of big couch potatoes too,
or
they
can be. Yeah, like, you know, Mastiffs are big, they're big goofs and big couch potatoes too. Although Mastiffs can be bred, it's nurture over nature, right? Because their nature is to be calm and submissive usually. But if we don't train them properly, they can become overprotective and aggressive.
Right.
So I would start definitely with asking the questions. Like, and if you wanted to do this on your own, just ask yourself, like, what is our lifestyle? And don't bullshit yourself. Like, don't bullshit yourself saying, well, I want to get a dog because I want to become a runner. No, become a runner and then go get a dog. Like, don't put the cart before the horse, because then you're going to end up, like, if you're like me and I've dieted my whole life, and if I was to get a dog that was like a border collie that needed so much attention and work, and then I was like, I'm going to get a border collie because I'm going to start, you know, doing agility. And then all of a sudden I fall off the wagon and I'm like, dang, like, I'm still the same person. And I got this border collie who's going out of his mind because there's nothing to do.
And now there's a hole in my sofa.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but, you know, what is your lifestyle now? Like, what can you offer this dog now in terms of your lifestyle? And then, and maybe it's a Great Dane, maybe it's a little Shih Tzu or a Bichon, or, you know, a dog that has a very mild temperament that can offer you that companionship while you're changing. And then you can take those breeds and you can make them more active, but take their nature first and say, okay, well, they're less active. This is my lifestyle, and then go from there. But if you're an athlete and you're a runner, you know, get your boxer, get your Malinois, get your jumping beans, you know, and then go forward. And then there's your mixed breeds that you get from the shelters, and you can tell right away those dogs. And you talk to the shelter workers and they're going to say, oh yeah, this dog is super active, you know, likes to terrorize all the other dogs, alpha than the rest, you know, do you want a strong dog? Because there's that spectrum, right? Like 10 would be your more dominant dog. And then, you know, one would be your very, very submissive or your run to the litter dog, right? So where in that balance are you? You know, are you a very strong personality where you could handle a blue nose pit bull, where you could, you know, where you could handle those big beefy dogs like a bulldog, right? And, you know, that would be the biggest thing for me, is just ask those questions and get those answers and then say, okay, in that line, these might be the type of dogs for you, or these might be the type of dogs for you. Do your research on those, because I don't want to choose your dog for you, right? But I want to give you an idea of what those breeds are that fit your lifestyle, and then let you make that choice on look, on, you know, color, you know, that kind of thing, temperament, that type of thing.
And I think a lot of it, like for me, like when I met Pixie, it was like a bond too. Like, you know what I mean? Like it wasn't just, okay, well, because I had actually selected three dogs to go and meet. And then I met Pixie and everything went really well. We bonded and played really well. And she was at the time, the perfect energy level for me, because I love to get out and go walking and, you know, and different stuff. So she fit what I needed. And I relied heavily on the adoption, like the agent, the coordinator there, to help me with that. And I think had I not had that person help me, I may have fallen into the crack of, oh my God, I got the wrong dog.
Yeah.
And so I'm very, very thankful for that.
And one of the things, like, you'd kind of hit a key point there, if I could just interject this little point, sure, is when you do get the wrong dog for you, give yourself permission just to admit it and just rehome, or, you know, do something better for the dog, right? Because if you're in conflict with your dog because they're not the right fit for you and you spend their life fighting with them or being unhappy, what kind of life is that giving them? You know, right. And you say, well, I commit because I chose this dog. Okay, well, that's fair. But what are you doing to the dog? Or what are you doing to yourself when this dog isn't the right fit for you? And so my frame of mind, because I've rehomed quite a few dogs, to be honest, because they weren't the right fit for me, whether I wasn't in the right frame of mind for that particular dog, or it doesn't matter where you are in your life, give yourself permission to make that choice. And, you know, I could say, well, that dog came to me for a reason. Well, that might be. But if you're not at the place to figure that out, then your dog would be best placed with somebody who can reciprocate that connection with them. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I'm kind of wondering, it just made me think about that rule, you know, the 3-3-3 rule.
Mm-hmm.
Or, so if you're having conflict with the dog, because I'm kind of wondering if a lot of times, like, people maybe jump the gun on returning dogs right away, just because they don't take time to get to know and get to understand.
Yeah, because so there's that 3-3-3 rule, but I actually, as a trainer, I like to say 10-10-10.
Okay.
I say 10 days, 10 weeks, 10 months, because being in the rescue industry to myself, like I've brought foster dogs home and I've seen drastic change between 3 days and 10 days. And then, you know, then that 10 weeks and then that 10 months. And I actually just rehomed a dog, a shepherd cross. His name was Ken. And he, you know, every time I would go to the shelter, that dog would start barking and he would bark and bark and bark. And I said to him one day, I said, what is your deal? And he told me, I'm bored. And when you come here, we play and we have fun. And so I eventually adopted this dog.
And within 10 months of having this dog, he was the biggest couch potato and the biggest lazy pants I have ever seen in my life. But when I met him at the shelter, he was all full of P&B. He was happier than a pig in mud. I brought him home 10 months later. You couldn't get him off the couch. You want to go outside? Ken, do you want to go outside? And he would just look at me.
And well, I'm comfortable here. Leave me alone.
Yeah. Like, I'm warm. I'm happy. And I started actually training him to be a service dog.
Right.
And I had one more thing to proof with him. And I know he would pass. I had one more thing to proof with him. And I decided that I was going to rehome him. And one of my dear friends has MS. And I rehomed him as the potential of a service dog for her. And as soon as I sent him to go live with her, he is living his best life. Like, he, because she's, her mobility isn't great. He's a couch potato. He has the potential of being an amazing service dog for her. And eventually that will probably happen because they gave her the service dog vest and all that stuff. All it would take is get a referral from her doctor, get him certified, and boom, you know? Yeah. So there's dogs that come in here.
You, like, emotion-wise, right? Like, yeah. Something could add to, you know, mental health-wise to having to fight with that one.
100%. And when you, and any dog that I brought into my home that I've adopted that I'm like, okay, you're not the right fit for me, you know, I end up being kind of that catalyst to finding them that perfect place that they were meant to go. You know what I mean? That maybe the shelter wouldn't have been able to find because they're in my peripheral, right? So it's been really, really fun and really interesting, and just even looking at myself and saying, okay, you know, actually this is what I need and this is what this dog isn't giving me. I bet you he would be a really good fit for someone else. And it's not like I rush out and go, oh my God, does anybody want a dog?
Right.
You know, it's like
you do the research to find somebody for them. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. See, and I've heard this before, and I mean, obviously because you volunteer at a shelter, so you'll know for sure. But I keep hearing that a dog at the shelter may not be the same dog that you get home.
100%. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And Ken is a prime example of that. And then Harper, my retriever, you know, she was so quiet and meek at the shelter. And, you know, and she got returned actually. She was on a sleepover and she got returned. And I was like, oh my God, I want that dog. And when I brought her home, she was just so like timid and, you know, look at me, I'm such a good girl.
Yeah.
And, you know, 3 months later, she's a holy terror. You know, and I was telling you earlier that I love her because she brings that kid-like energy into my home that we don't have, because most of our dogs are older. Odin's 9, Storm is 8, Chessie's 5, coming 6 in April. And so she's the youngin'. And she just keeps us on our toes. And sometimes it's a big pee off, but at the same time, you got to look at her and laugh because you're like, you are not the dog I adopted. Where did she go? I want her back.
It's like bait and switch.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like they're on their best behavior. And then you see what they're like within that, you know, that 3 to 10 months. And you know, you really just have to, you have to roll with it. And again, giving yourself permission if it's not the right fit. But yeah, if it's not going to work out for you in the first 7 days, then you have to make that decision because then you're committed, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, take them back and let somebody else have a go at them. But yeah, when I adopt the dog, I'm all in typically. And then I usually will wait that 10 months out and then find out at that time, you know, maybe this isn't going to fit for me, but it'll probably be a good fit for so-and-so who might be looking for a dog or whatever.
That's interesting. I always wonder, because when you hear the stories about how, because a lot of dogs that are in like shelters and whatnot, facilities, they're probably intimidated to begin with, right? Like, you know, a little scared, maybe a little nervous, a little bit of anxiety, you know, all of the above. And so when they get comfortable around their people,
Yeah.
Their real dogginality comes out.
Dogginality. I love that. Yeah.
100%. You know, they're sentient beings. They have feelings. Like they don't, you know, I think a lot of people are like, oh, my fur baby and my baby. And okay, they're not your babies. Like I get that you feel that way, but they're not, like I say to my dogs all the time, oh, my little dog, you know, or my little baby. But in reality, they are not babies. They are dogs. They have weapons in their mouth. And at any given time, they can use those weapons, you know, whether they've never bitten anybody in their life. And then 11 years later, they bite a child, you know, you always want to maintain a very safe environment for your dogs. And, you know, I had a foster dog, Bones, come to my home and he lived with a homeless man for a number of years, and he got dropped off at the shelter and he would just moan, and you would walk by his kennel and he would just look up at you and he would just moan like he was in some sort of pain. Yeah. And so my boss essentially says, do you mind working with Bones? And I was like, no, not at all. He came to my house and he was here not even 2 weeks. And I saw a prey drive that I never saw in a dog before. I was like, oh my word, this dog is crazy. He'd jump our fence outside. He'd just go on little neighborhood tours. He was just like, and I would always have him on a house leash in the house because we have three cats. And I noticed that he was kind of stalking the cats a little bit. So I always put him on a house leash to make sure that I always have control. And I had thought that my husband had let the cats outside before he left for work. And Oliver, our one young cat, she came to lick out of the water dish and he saw her. I was on the phone. He took off. He ripped the leash out of my hand and he caught her and he almost killed her.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So that change happened from him moaning and being depressed to being high prey drive, dangerous. Adam.
Right.
So, yes, very much different from point A to point B. Yeah.
So it's something you have to watch out. And do you find that, because like a lot of dogs, like, are like you're warned ahead of time, certain dogs might have a higher prey drive than others. Do you think that that is the case for like all dogs with that, like, you know, because they can say, oh, pit bulls might have a high prey drive. So do you think that's all pit bulls, or do you think there's other factors in there as well besides just the breed?
Yeah, you're right on the marker. It's really just going to depend. And again, come on in. Just one sec, Marla. Sorry about that, Marla. We're getting our house renovated and Shay just needed to ask a question. Sorry, where were we?
We're just talking about how certain breeds might be more prey drive, or might have more prey drive than others. And I asked if that can be a blanket statement for the whole breed.
Yeah, so you can have a pit bull. And then again, right, it's natural, it's nurture over nature. Because in reality, pit bulls are known to be fighters, right? They're a protective breed. They were actually used for herding at one point in time, if you believe that or not. But when you nurture a dog in a certain way, like this dog Bones, he was a pit bull cross and he ended up being a very dangerous dog. But he also lived with a homeless man for years, right? So very protective, very on guard all the time. And then you look at your little doggies, like Piper, and she's just a little sweetheart, mischievous little turd.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And she likes to annoy our cat. She doesn't really chase her, but I keep thinking, like, I'll catch her chasing after Paisley the cat, and I'll be like, leave the cat alone. And then I'll catch the cat doing something to the dog to kind of instigate the whole thing.
And so that happens to Selma, our little gray cat. Just the same thing. It's so funny. But yeah, like breeds, you know, there's their nature. You know, like I use Australian Shepherds and even Labs. Like, but Labs can be aggressive, you know. Australian Shepherds can be aggressive. It's how you nurture those personalities and what outlets that you give them to be that breed. And it's so important to understand that, because if you don't understand the breed and you don't understand the DNA and what they're bred for, then how are you going to understand how to deal with them? And if you deal with a lab like you would a border collie, you're doing them a disservice because you're not giving them what they need. Mm-hmm. And so that nurture part of it is so, so important, because there's so many pit bulls out there that wouldn't hurt a fly. And then there's so many out there that would, but that goes for huskies, that goes for border collies, that goes for any number. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen an unbalanced border collie, but it is not fun. And they are not my favorite breed of dog to train when they're not balanced, because they're so out of whack and they're so tenacious and high strung that they're dangerous. Do you know what I mean?
So what do you mean by unbalanced? Explain to everyone what you mean by that.
So unbalanced would be where the brain is in high prey drive mode or fight mode all the time.
Okay.
And so they don't know how to be calm. They've never learned to be relaxed. They've never learned to deal with their own crap, right? Like we talk about ourselves, like if you sit in silence for long enough, stuff will start to come up and you have to deal with that, or you just get up and be busy, right? And you just ignore it. Well, that's what they'll do. If they're not feeling comfortable, they're just going to find something else to do. And it's usually not in a good way. So balance to me is having a calm, submissive dog. You know, when I was training and, you know, somebody would bring in an orangutan and we would train and the dog would soften and they would come in and say, oh my God, you broke our dog. Yeah. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I broke your dog. Well, you broke their spirit. And I'm like, pick up a tug toy and start playing with your dog. You know, it's when I say so. Calm and submissive is a good trait, not a bad trait. It doesn't mean your dog is broken. It means your dog knows how to relax, right? You know, we talk about people that have anxiety and they say, well, would you just relax? Well, if you don't know how to relax or you don't have the techniques, then how do you do that?
Right.
And that's what we will teach the dogs in training, is how to relax, how to be calm, how to self-soothe, how to be in a kennel. Because if your dog can't handle a 4x6 kennel, how in the heck are they going to manage your life? Right. How are they going to take care of your home? Right. They're going to do it very destructively because they don't know what to do with all this space.
Right. And do you think like a lot of that, like, I had a lot of energy that a dog has, or like that anxiety that they have, that some of it is obviously the dog itself. Like if you have a rescue or whatever, they may bring some of whatever experience that they've had. Right. But do you think a lot of some of it can be accounted to the type of energy their person has as well?
100%. Yeah. And even if you bring a dog home, you know, whether you've adopted the dog from a shelter and it's Heinz 57 or an Alberta special or whatever you want to call them, or if it's a purebred, whether you adopt them or whether you get them from a breeder or whether you get them from a farm, it doesn't matter where you get them from. If they come to you with any type of anxiety, that can be from a disconnection from the mom, a disconnection from the pack, like who knows where that anxiety might come from. And then you have anxiety, you just exacerbate it.
Right.
So when you tell me a Gen Xer, or even like, you know, us Gen Xers, you know, that don't have some type of ADHD or autism or
some kind of anxiety.
You know, because we were beat as kids, you know, like, yeah.
We were kicked out of the house Saturday morning and told not to come back until the lights came on.
Exactly. So tell me that doesn't breed some sort of anxiety. But people nowadays, you know, have to really have compassion for that, because a lot of people can't cope or are unable to cope with a lot of stresses in their lives. And that's really sad. But at the same time, a dog can be really helpful for that. But again, remember that scale I was talking about, you know, 10 being a very strong dog and then 1 being a very submissive dog. If you don't find yourself a dog somewhere in between or closer to the more, you know, strong side, then you're just going to exacerbate that behavior more and more and more. And then you end up with a dog who's an absolute train wreck, and, you know, you can't cope, they can't cope. And then you're just a big mess together.
I have to share this with you, because this is kind of in the same theory. I've been going to the same vet. Like, I took Pixie to the vet, and Piper and Penny go there now. And I was taking Piper in last year for her spay. And you know how they do the blood panel workup before? Yeah. And so I had taken her in, and she went and got her blood work done. And there's three vets that work there. And I had seen the other two with Piper for her 3-month shots. And the third vet came out to the lobby while I was getting a blood panel done closer to her 6-month age. And she's down on the floor playing with Piper. And I was so excited to see her because I didn't see her before. And I was like, Dr. Spritzler, I'd love you. This is my new puppy, Piper. And she's like, yeah, I met Piper last time she was here. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that. And she's like, she's a really nice puppy and she's got such good energy. And then she stood up and looked at me and she goes, all of your dogs have such good energy. They would pick that up from you. And I thought,
yeah,
how nice of a compliment to have your vet tell you you have, you know, your dogs are good. You know what I mean? Like, it's a great compliment. And then I got thinking after, I'm like, I'm pretty sure the dogs are covering for me because I'm pretty crazy. So I'm not really sure if that was really me or there. They're like, no, we like her. She gives us lots of cookies. Don't tell on her. So.
But there's obviously some truth to that. You've chosen yourself a breed of dog that is able to handle any type of crazy.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, and pit bulls
they balance like crazy.
Yeah, 100%. So like, whereas if I get high strung or if I get upset, my labs are like, oh, for frig's sake, just calm down. And my Aussies are like, wah, 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 da, 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 you know, they're all over the place and nuts too. So, you know, it goes back to that nature, you know, nature versus nurture and how we can use our dogs to help ourselves or we actually use them and it hinders them and hinders ourselves. You know, you get that codependency kind of thing, you know, and anxiety is so bad for dogs. I mean, it's bad for humans too, obviously, but when you've got a dog that it lives a very short life compared to what we live, and then you put them in a position where they're anxious all the time, it's really just going to shorten their lives and make their lives miserable for that whole time. And it's as a dog trainer and a dog person, I see that, you know, more and more now where dogs are biting more, they're frantic, they're anxiety ridden. And then you talk to the owner and you say, you know, these are the things that you need to do to fix that. And they're like, no, that's not my fault. It's not my, you know, so, and it's very challenging to talk to people about their mental health without them feeling judged or without them feeling like, you know, they have something to prove. And that's not what it's about. It's about building a better relationship or a better bond between you and your dog.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, cause like, even if you are, you know, you're with that dog for 10 or 11 years, you want those to be the majority enjoyable, right? Like, yeah. I mean, I know like every relationship, whether it's you and your dog or you and your friends or whatever, there's going to be little hiccups here and there. Right. But you got to work towards something. And I think having that good companion between you and your pup is a great way to start right with that. So.
Well, and you have them for sometimes 14, 16 years.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, as your personality changes, your dog's personality is going to change, or you know your dog so well that you know when there's something wrong with them where you can get them checked. Whereas if you have a dog that is that's in a bad mental state, you know, you can't read them, right? Because, you know, my dog is aggressive or my dog has anxiety. How are you ever supposed to say, oh, there's something wrong with my dog when they've never been calm enough for you to be able to even see that there's a change? Does that make sense? Like, it's like, I want to be able to grow with my dogs. And, you know, Odin's 9 years old and he's turning into a grumpy old man. And, you know, and I'm turning 53 and I'm feeling like a pretty grumpy old lady. So, you know, I think
they're match made in heaven.
Right. So, you know, I look at him sometimes and I'm like, man, you're ornery lately, you know, but he's so balanced in a lot of ways that I can tell that change, right?
Yeah.
You know, because he's, oh, you know, geez, he's getting a little bit grouchy, you know, where he's not taking to things too kindly anymore. And and then recognizing that. And sometimes too, like when my husband passed away, you know, I let my training slide with my two Aussies for a long time. And they went from being like super balanced and really good to, you know, almost like people that would come to me for training. Mm-hmm. And I own these dogs now, right? And you can't give up on them. And then that means you can't give up on yourself. And so their imbalance to me showed me my imbalance and what I need to do to get my crap together to make their lives better, because they were not happy and I was not happy. And together we were just a mess of unhappy. And so once I got my poop in a group, you know, they started becoming more balanced, because then I was able to say, okay, like enough is enough. We've got to really work on this together. And things started getting a lot better for all of us. So again, it's about looking inside. What is your dog trying to show you about yourself that you need to work on so that you can do that? Because Odin would just be so aggressive. And my daycare staff would say, oh, Odin tried to eat someone's face today. And I'm like, oh, Odin the face eater. Okay.
Yeah.
And there's so many times where, you know, in therapy after I look at that and I'm like, you know, he wants to bite faces off. He's showing me that outside of myself. And I'll tell you, inside of myself, I wanted to rip people's faces off.
Yeah.
Because I was so angry and so upset about losing my husband of 25 years. And, you know, and there's no reason for it. Right. And so my dog was like, you know, gah, gah, gah. And I'm like, yeah, because I want to do that too. Because I want to just yell and scream at people because I'm just so angry and PO'd at what happened in my life. So, you know, he helped me to recognize that in myself where I need to like settle down and find a way to cope with this grief.
But do you think so? Like, I was wondering about this, about how... Because he was obviously with your husband too, right? So he obviously had an element of grief as well.
100%. It's really funny that you bring that up, because John passed away at home and Odin and Storm were both there, and Odin jumped up on his bed and howled.
Right.
And he howled every night for probably a week or more.
Right.
And then once in a while in the middle of the night, he would howl. So 100% that there's grief there too, for sure. Storm, he's kind of a little turd. He kind of jumped up on John and licked his face, and that was sort of the end of it. Right. But I feel like he's a little detached.
Everybody handles grief in their own way. Yeah.
So yeah, 100% he was probably grieving on his own. And, you know, both of us were having a really tough time with it, because he spent a lot of time with John too.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, and I really believe that, like, because I believe like dogs, you know, you have a multi-person household. If you have a dog, that dog has a different interaction with each person in the house. Like, I mean, granted, they're looked at, you know, as a member of the pack. We're all, you know, we're all pack members or whatever. But I always found it interesting how in a family, a dog would, you know, they listen to the commands from each person or whatever, but they would play a little differently with each person. You know what I mean? Like, they'd have a slightly different interaction with each person. Because I remember growing up, you remember Chemo, our dog Chemo we had?
Yeah.
And I remember Chemo would interact with Dad differently, and he'd interact with me differently. And it would be kind of like another different play with Mom and another different with Michael, because Mike was quite young when we got him. Like, I think Michael was like 5 or 6. Right? So, and I just remember seeing that. And I've seen that time and time again, how there might be, you know, there might be generalized, you know, behavior with each member of the household, but there might be a little different game with each person. You know what I mean? So they might kind of look at each person slightly different, I wonder.
Totally 100% correct. It's interesting, because in training, when the families would come back to do their go-home sessions, we'd always do a 2 to 3 hour go-home session with the client, showing them videos of progress and what to do and proofing videos and stuff like that. And, you know, then, you know, the husband would have a great authoritarian relationship with the dog, and then the mom not so much, because the moms are nurturers, and, you know, they feel bad, right? And the dog picks up on that. And dogs, they are self-rewarding selfish, you know, they what they can take advantage of, they 100% will.
Right.
And so if you're, and I don't want to use the word dominant because I know in the industry, there's a lot of like, oh, balanced trainers suck and force-free trainers suck and no, everybody sucks and nobody can get along and all this stuff. So I'm going to risk your podcast here by saying that dominance is not a thing, but you definitely want to be a pack leader. And that's actually a swear word in the dog training community now. Like pack leader, you know, means discipline and it means harshness. And that's not the case. Like if you're a real true trainer, you're not going to do anything that harms that dog, but I'm still in the mindset that the pack leader is the best way to go. So when you have a weaker or more submissive type personality training a dog, they're going to have your number immediately.
Oh, yeah.
And they're definitely going to have that relationship that's different than, and they're going to struggle. The human is going to struggle with that dog because that dog is now, oh yeah, I see you. I'm bigger than you. I'm higher than you in the hierarchy. So that, you know, so I'm going to take advantage of that. And it's no different than being in a litter of puppies where you have your pack leader of the puppies all the way down to the one that gets picked on the most.
Right.
And, you know, so 100% the children are going to have a different relationship with them unless they show the dog, you know, no, actually you're not allowed to do that. I might be small, but I'm mighty and you don't get to get away with that even with me. And it's interesting because people come for training and they'll say, well, my son of 15 doesn't want anything to do with the dog, but yet the dog sleeps on the end of his bed. And I would say, well, if your son doesn't want to participate in the dog getting better, then your son doesn't get to participate in the dog at all. So the dog doesn't get to lay on the end of your son's bed. Your dog doesn't get to snuggle with your son if your son doesn't want to put the priority in to make this dog better. And I'm kind of harsh that way because I'm like, well, if you can't participate in the family dog, then you shouldn't have a dog.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know,
sorry, I had to mute a little bit because Penny was making her contribution.
Oh, that's okay.
Here.
My dog.
I think she can hear your dogs in the back because as soon as she heard them, she got a little excited. Yeah, see, there she is. She's talking back to them.
Well, and speaking of pack too, like you can hear, like I let my dogs outside and you can hear when one starts, they all go. Yeah. And it just takes one, right? And then, you know, it's like follow the leader. And so when you have a multiple dog home, you've got to be on top of everything all the time. Yeah. And, you know, it can get quite exhausting, but at the same time, you got to choose your battles. Yeah, and honestly, exactly. If they're barking for 5 seconds outside, it really doesn't bother me at all.
No, exactly.
So, sorry. No, sorry, funny. Penny.
She's looking at you. It was funny though, because when Penny was a baby, when Pixie was still with us, it was funny because Pixie would bark and tell me like somebody's at the door or whatever, but Penny didn't really bark that much. She only got excited when a dog went by. So Penny had to like put her 2 cents in there. So the two of them would be looking out the window of my office, barking at dogs walking by. But if somebody came to the door, it was always Pixie that barked. Penny would just kind of stand behind her and watch. I just thought that was so interesting. Like they're just the two different dogs. I don't know.
Well, they're yin and yang, right? Like you have, you know, you have dogs that one's probably more settled and quiet and the other one's a little bit more high strung and barky. But you have that yin and yang, which is really, really good because then you don't have fighting in your house.
Yeah. And I noticed since Pixie died, Penny's kind of stepped up to that. And now Piper only barks when a dog walks by. Piper doesn't bark when someone's at the door, but Penny does now. So it's kind of like Penny's taken over from Pixie since Pixie left. And now Piper's taken over from Penny.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny.
It's a learned behavior, right? Like if you have a dog that's aggressive, let's say, and you say, oh, well, I'll just get that dog a companion. That would be my biggest rejection is please don't. Like fix the problem within your dog first before you get a second dog, because that dog is just going to teach that dog how to be aggressive and they're going to be pals and they're just going to gang up on the world.
You
know, and nobody's going to be happy.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, I used to think it was funny because when Penny was, before I got the handle on walking the two dogs together, I would walk them individually. And I was following this couple, and I don't know if they were like a dating couple or friends or whatever, but I was close enough to kind of hear a little bit of their talk, but far enough away that I wasn't like, it didn't look obvious that I could hear them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And they're walking, and I see this woman, there's a woman and a man. I see her point at my house. And I'm like, what the heck? She's pointing at my house. And then I hear her say, that's the house that has the two pit bulls.
Oh, gee.
I know. And I was like, okay. And then I got thinking, you do realize if you give my dogs a slice of cheese, you can walk out with my TV and you'd be good. Yeah, like, there's nothing there, right? But I thought, you know,
help you move.
Exactly. But the funny thing was, I, at the time, and still now, I'm a single woman living in the city. And if that's what's going to give me an added security to my house, people are going to be under the information of what people are like, hey, cool, I got an added security door.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, if you go through like the 80s to the 90s to the 2000s, like the 80s was Dobermans, and then the 90s was
right.
German Shepherds, and then there, you know, and then there, then the pit bulls come. Like it seems like every era has their, you know, has their
boogie
dog toys for, you know, but there was one year where huskies had more bites on them than pit bulls.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it, you know, the difference is that pit bulls, when they attack, they go for the kill. And I think that that's what gives them the bad rap, is that once they get triggered, but again, that trigger is going to be that nurture, you know, how they nurtured. And then, you know, this is too said to you folks, do not ever leave your dogs alone with your babies.
Exactly. Regardless of what breed.
Yeah. You squeak a toy and you see your dog go crazy, and then you have a screaming child. And, you know, I don't care how docile and tame you think your dog is, but I really do not like these photos. And you can cut this out if you want, but I don't like photos with babies cuddling up to dogs and stuff like that, you know, because I just have, and it's fine if they're under supervision, because obviously the dog's not going to hurt the baby, but, you know, it gives the dog permission then to go lay with the baby at any given time. And my dog Odin is the kindest dog you will ever meet. He's never put his teeth on anything. You know, he's snappy, but he's never bit anything in his life. And I was at our cottage in Ontario, and my niece's baby was laying on the floor, and Odin started circling the baby and growling. And I was like, okay, this is not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I told Amy, I said, anytime your baby is on the floor, Odin needs to be outside.
Yeah.
And because everybody's just letting the baby be on the floor and cooing. And that's the last thing I need, is for him to attack the baby. Yeah. And that's how quickly it can happen. And I would never distrust my dog to, you know, to bite someone.
Yeah.
But when that comes into effect, I'm like, no, you need to separate the two.
Yeah, I think that's just responsible. Like, I mean, there was a story I read, I can't remember where I found it now, about how there are so many babies that have been bitten by Cocker Spaniels. Like, people just think, oh, it's a tiny dog. It's a small dog. It won't do any damage. Well, it can do damage on a baby, regardless of what type of dog it is, whether it's a chihuahua.
Yeah, I had this last year, I've had more biting dogs than in my whole career. And we took the worst of the worst. We took last chance dogs at my facility. And I've never been bitten more times than in this last couple of years. And they were by little dogs, and man, they hurt. Like, my hands were chewed up, they were bitten, they were bleeding. Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I don't care if it's a big dog or little dog, you still have that poundage on that bite.
Yeah.
And it could kill a baby easily.
Yeah, exactly. And you just have to be more cautious around there. And the same with kids, like, it bothers me, like, the pictures. I mean, I think it's cute. The parents are with the dogs watching, the dogs are watching the baby and the parents are there. I love those pictures. I think those are great. What I'm nervous about is when you see a toddler grab a dog's ear or grab a dog's tail in those pictures and videos. And I'm like, oh, that dog could turn around. You know, he's having a bad day, or he's got, you know, because, like, some dogs, like my poor Penny, gets ear infections in the springtime. It's like an enviro thing. The doctor said there's nothing specific she's allergic to, but she ends up getting she has to go on eardrops every spring. And so if somebody grabbed her ear, it could be hurt and she could end up biting someone, you know, as a snap. Like, I mean, she's never done that.
Oh, I lost you. There you are.
Oh, yeah. It was just my phone kicked on because I'm recording on the phone. Okay.
Yeah, the thing about that is dogs will tolerate and tolerate and tolerate. And then one day maybe they're not feeling good or they've just had enough. And then they turn around and they bite. You know, it's like children playing in their kennels or children playing on their beds. And it's like, no, that's the dog. Like, teach your child to respect your dog's space, just like you want to teach the dog to respect the child's space. And it's so important to put that in there. It's like cats, they smother babies, right? Because they want to go and lay on them and they lay on their face. And I see that a few times when my cats come in our room when we're sleeping and all of a sudden I have a cat on my face.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay, you're smothering me. Like, I can't breathe.
Yeah, but a baby, you can push it off, not the baby, not a baby, right?
Yeah, exactly. So just be really, you know, cautious of that, because even though your dog seems really tolerant, there might be a time where that dog is not tolerant anymore. And remember, what I'm saying is that they have weapons in their mouth, and those weapons can hurt, and they can kill, and it's just not a position that you want to be in, for sure.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I find it interesting. Want to go back to when you're talking about training and walking for dogs. And I noticed this with Pixie and with Piper. Penny's kind of pretty good with everything. But, you know, what I noticed, like, Penny, I could take her for a walk and she's tired. She's like a couch potato after a 40-minute walk. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. She's good. But both Pixie and now Piper, what I've noticed is I got to do more than just a walk. Like, so I've got to do a lot of mental stimulation as well. So it's like teaching tricks or, you know, puzzle games or something like that. In your facility, did you guys do a lot of mental kind of training as well? Like, yes.
Like daycare is both mentally and physically stimulating because you've got dogs that are teaching each other throughout the day, really. But in training specifically, it's all about the mind food. It's all about the mind food. And when we used to run this little weekend program called Urban Agility, and my business partner and I at the time, people would sign up for this weekend class, and we would go down White Ave, which is a really busy kind of up and coming place in Edmonton. And we would teach them how to do urban agility with their dogs. And urban agility is like, I call it parkour, but it's parkour. It's like jumping up on things, you know, helping them boost. Like, it helps with confidence. It helps with their agility, keeping their joints strong, that type of thing.
Right.
And we would have the dogs jumping all over things. Like, my dog Storm can climb trees. Like, it's insane what they can do. And people would walk by or drive by and they would honk and everybody like, love your dogs, you know, because we're giving them physical stimulation as well as mental stimulation. And it's so important because you can take them for half hour walk, and then eventually it has to be an hour walk, and then eventually it has to be an hour and a half walk. And, you know, because it's like us going to the gym, right? The more we go, the stronger we are. We have to up our weights. We have to up our time on the treadmills, that kind of thing, right? You know, to keep that working mode, you know. And dogs are no different. They're going to get in shape and then they're going to need more. But if you gave them a half an hour walk and 10, 15 minutes of mental stimulation every day, you know, I like 3 15-minute training sessions a day, and, you know, get them busy working their brains, even sit stays, down stays, you know, anything that's going to keep their brain active. And then they start to yawn and they start to pant. And then you're like, okay, your brain's on fire. That's really good. And then, you know, 10 minutes later, they need a nap because they're being exhausted. It's no different than us going to work, right? And having a really hard day. Like, you work hard, you use your brain all day.
Yeah.
You know, when you're doing that kind of stuff, you know, you come home and you're like, damn, I need a glass of wine, or I need to decompress somehow, because you're exhausted, right? Because your brain, but your body,
your body is like, oh, I couldn't possibly do a walk today because my brain is too tired. And the dogs are the same way. They don't, you know, physical activity is 100% needed, but mental stability, in my opinion, is just as important as physical. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, I still do, like, we still do training with Penny too, but she's more of a, oh, that's fun because I get treats. But whereas with Piper, it's more like it's required, because it's so funny. Like, I'm noticing so many similarities to Pixie in Piper. And it's funny as we'll go to bed, and if she hasn't got enough energy out, like she sleeps at the foot of my bed, just like Pixie did, she will decide that my toes are toys.
Oh, yeah.
She'll start chewing on my, trying to chew on my toes through the blankets, because she's like, hey, I've still got a bunch of energy here. Amuse me. They play with me. Meanwhile, Penny's snoring. You know, she's like snoring away.
That's so cute. Yeah, dogs that have like that are very, very stimulated prey drive. You know, they do, they need that mental outlet, and whatever it is that you can do to help exhaust that would be super, super good. You know, like, and, you know, talking about treats too, when you have a dog that is very, very high treat motivated, I never train with treats with dogs that are high treat motivated. No. I would use maybe toys or something like that, because, you know, you have to regulate their food. Otherwise they're going to get too big for their bodies. And, you know, then you spur on, like, no different than us, right? You know, carrying heavier weight and having joint issues and stuff. But if you could use toys to stimulate, that would be even better. And even in the circumstances that we did use food, we would use that only to show the dog what it is that we wanted. And as soon as they caught on, the food was gone. And then it would just praise, just because you don't want your dog to be addicted to you're making that connection that I only have to do this when there's food involved. No, you have to do this every single time I asked you to, actually. And then they go, well, no, because you don't have any treats. If you phase the treats out quickly, then they understand, okay, this is the behavior that you want. You give me food, but then you switch out the food for praise. Or toy or something other than, because you don't want them to be doing it just for food, because then when you really need them to do it, they won't.
Right.
The only command that I ever use food for continuously is recall, because being on leash and recall are the two hardest things to teach a dog. Because being on a leash, they're like, why am I on a leash? My DNA doesn't say that I should be on this thing that you're tagging me around with, you know. And then recall, they're meant to go hunt and get their supply of food and stuff like that. And so recall is a very tough thing for them too. And, you know, to break their concentration on whatever it is that they're focused on. And if you can do that, you know, I would use food for recall for at least a year and then start phasing that out. But I'm also a firm believer of using e-collars, especially with super stubborn dogs. Mm. You know, all of my dogs, if I'm going to put a prong collar and e-collar on your dog, I'm going to put a prong and e-collar on my dog.
Right.
And I'm going to finesse it and use it. And I did a TikTok actually on my Cat the Dog Trainer TikTok page about this guy that I met who, and I know I'm spinning off into a different sort of area, but he says that he's using an e-collar on his dog. And I said, well, you know that they need proper training for that. And he's like, he is properly trained. He doesn't do what I say and I zap him. And I'm like, well, bravo. Congratulations. You've just failed you're a good person test. But when I use those aggressive tools, they are not meant to hurt the dog. And if you do hurt your dog with those, then shame on you, because that is not what they're meant for. They're meant specifically just to get your dog's attention, like tapping on your shoulder. If I tapped on your shoulder because you had your ear pods in or whatever, and I tapped on your shoulder and I said, Marla, and you turned around and looked at me and I was like, hi, you know, blah, blah, blah. When I use an e-collar, even a prong collar, and I put pressure on that collar, you know, it's like a tap on the shoulder saying Harper, and they look at me and I go, good, come here. You know, it's not to zap them and say, get your butt over here. It's only to get their attention. Like I tap on your shoulder and you turn around and look at me. I'll use an e-collar and I'll tap that collar until the dog looks at me, to not until I shock the dog and the dog cries in pain. Does that make sense? So maybe we can do another podcast on tools, because I was
That would be really good, actually, because I know a lot of people that do that, you know, because we had tried a training class with a clicker training, and I could not get that for me. Like, I just, like, I know, like, people use the clicker and then give an award, right? Like, they click and then give the treat. So I would really, that'd be a great thing to do, because I, for some reason, I was just like easier with the treat. Like Pixie just watched my hands, like, oh, I get a treat if I do this, or, you know, like, she knew more that way than the clicker, because I'd be like, oh, here's your treat. I'd forget to use the clicker.
Yeah. Well, even tone, right? Because, you know, I don't use clickers either, but there's Pavlov's law when it comes to clicker training. And, you know, but even saying good, you know, or something, like, good boy, you know, my clients would be like, good girl. And I'm like, hey, but if you're using a clicker, your clicker doesn't go clicker.
Yeah, exactly.
It goes click, you know, so be quick about it, because you have about 0.8 of a second before your dog's onto something else. You got to get that in there within that 0.8 of a second for your dog to, oh, okay, that's what you want. So you can't say good girl, because that takes way too long. You have to say good, you know, click, like a clicker. So yeah, it's interesting. You know, with the things that people, the techniques are all different out there, but it's, again, what works for you and for your dog, because there's coordination involved. And let me tell you, when I first started working with long lines, I got my feet tangled up. I was like, I don't know. I'm like, I'm hanging myself. What is going on here?
I saw this great video about that. A young girl, I think she was just learning. She was just becoming a trainer, and she got the long line wrapped around her feet, and the dog just took off and she got spun around and rolled on the ground. I was like, oh, you know, like, because, like, I didn't want to laugh, you know, one of those things. I don't want to laugh until I know she's okay. And then when she got up, and I just started howling, because it was like the funniest thing I'd seen. I'm like, and another reason I'm laughing is because I could totally see myself doing that. Like, I can totally see myself getting tripped up like that.
Yeah, 100%. And so, unless, like, it took me a long time as a trainer to learn how to use a long line. Because when you're using e-collar, you have to start with a long line. And oh man, I'd get so tangled up, and then the dog would be like, "What are you doing, dum dum?"
Exactly. You're like entertainment for the dog.
Entertainment for the dog.
That's funny. I used to think about how, you know, it's an ongoing project, right? Like, you can't just say, I'm giving my dog to Cat for a couple of weeks and it'll be trained and then I don't have to do anything again. People don't realize that it's ongoing to begin with. Like, you have to continue to work with them, right? Because you're going to go back to factory reset here.
Exactly. I love
this crazy dog. He's going to come back to, and you would have a continuing business, obviously, but.
Yeah. Well, but we would also offer, you know, backup support. So your program, like, our programs are pretty expensive, but that came with lifetime follow-up and then Saturday walk the walk classes. And so my clients always felt supported in their journey with their dog. And so the lifetime follow-up was, if you do your job at home and you're still experiencing problems, then, you know, then you have us to support you. But if you just think that after a week your dog is going to come home and be perfect and you hold us responsible because they aren't, then I have a problem with that.
Yeah.
So you have a responsibility to your dog, because your dog goes through those baby years, and then the toddler years, and the teenage years, and then the adult years, and then the senior years, and if you think your dog doesn't change every few years or every stage, you know, you're so mistaken. Because look at yourself. When you're a baby, you're this way. When you're a toddler, you're this way. When, you know, hopefully by the time you're my age at 53 or our age at 53, I just outed you. Oops.
Yeah, that's okay. I'm not there yet. Not till August.
So it's one of those those things that, you know, every single time your dog changes in a stage, their behavior is going to change. I had my dog Triton for 14 years and the first time ever he ran across the street, I walked that dog off leash. He was never on a collar. He was never on a leash. And one day I was walking him down the street and he ran across the street and attacked a dog. And I was like, what in heck is going on here? And he ended up having cancer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then he passed away. But every
stage, like, a lot of behavior issues can come from illness or injury.
Yep, 100%. But, you know, your dogs are very needy. Dogs are needy. They're not like cats where you can leave a litter box and a week's worth of food out and say, sayonara, I'm going to Mexico. Yeah. You know, you have to find a dog sitter and you have to, you know, or you have to kennel them or you have to, you know, they need you to help them and support them. So if you take a training class, whether it be $2,400 or $5,000, it doesn't matter. The onus comes back on you, which is why we do our 3-hour go home sessions. We proof all the training and we show you videos of what your dog can do, because what we can do with your dog and what you need to learn to do with your dog are two totally different things.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like the whole idea, like you're working with the dog and then you have to train the person. Like it's like, yeah, two different types of education there.
Yeah. And you know what's fun for my careers too is because I was a life coach for, you know, 10, 12 years. And then I was a dog trainer for 14 years. And it's interesting because both of them came in super, super handy because I was counseling people and working with dogs. So it kind of fit that category because you really are counseling people, because when you're dealing with a dog that has, you know, these issues, you're really digging into a person's personal life and saying, you know, what is going on with you actually that might, you know, show this kind of behavior? What is happening in your home that might be showing this behavior? I just had a client reach out to me, even though I'm not dog training anymore, I have an obligation to my clients to be available because I said lifetime support for your dog. And so I'm always available if they need me. And he messages me, and him and his partner had split up and his dog came to live with him and he's experiencing panic attacks, this dog. And, you know, so just change in behavior, you know, from this move and from this change in the pack and all that stuff, this dog has developed a severe anxiety condition. And so I'm working with him right now to try and figure out a way to help calm this dog. And so everything that's going on in your life is going to affect your dog. Everything.
It's interesting. You don't realize like how much they pick up from you. You know, like it's, I mean, and you know, you think about it too, like a lot of people, when you go to work or go to the office, they pick up on your mood might change or whatever. And, yeah, you know, but then there's also how much of this, the dogs can pick up even more. I think they're even more pay attention more than anybody else.
Yeah. 100%. And it's funny because people say, oh, my dog knows what they did was wrong, because they'll come in and there'll be garbage all over the house.
Yeah.
But actually, your dog doesn't have that long-term memory.
Yeah.
You come in the house and you see the mess and you're instantly angry and the dog is cowering from your energy, actually. Yeah. And it has nothing to do with them tearing the garbage apart. You walk in the house and you're like, what the, you know? And your dog is like, oh, crap, my owner is ruined.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they would. And that's the thing. Like, I mean, I don't think I've ever, like, when I catch, like I said, I caught, you know, Piper has taken stuff off the counter. She's a freaking acrobat. I swear to God. I've nicknamed her my tornado because she can move around the house so freaking fast. It's funny. But yeah, stuff that she's done, and I sit there and I so want to be mad at her, but I know it's something I've done. And I can't give her heck because, you know, I probably not caught her at the exact time. You know what I mean? Like I've come in after the fact.
Yeah.
So I can't really say anything.
So I'm going to give you a little training trick.
Okay.
Do you know that Kraft Singles cheese?
Yes.
I love that stuff. It's like it's like, but I could eat a whole.
I was going to say, it's like two elements away from being plastic or whatever this joke is.
Dang, I love it. Anyway, you take a piece out of the cellophane and you tear it and you stick it on the edge of your counter because it's the only cheese that will stick on your counter. So you actually use it like a sticker
and you stick it on the edge of your counter, not the top of it, but the edge. And then you put Pixie on a leash and you bring her over to the counter. And if she goes to jump up and get it, you just say, and you draw up on the leash and you place her into a sit. and then if she tries again, you go, and then you place her back into that sit and she'll be salivating, and then you walk away from it and then you come back. And after about 10 minutes of the training where she doesn't get it, you peel it off and you throw it in the garbage or eat it. I would probably just eat it, but you just pull it off. You know, I would eat it and then training session over. And she's going to start to realize that just because it's on the counter doesn't mean she gets it.
Right. Yeah.
And it works. It works like a hot darn. I actually use peanut butter because the lady that I went to see, she was vegan. So she didn't have actual cheese in the house. Right. And so we used peanut butter and we flathered peanut butter on the edge of the counter. And then when I was done with the dog, I just wiped the peanut butter off the counter. And she just did this over and over and over again, 2, 3, 4 times a day. And eventually the dog didn't start counter surfing at all because she realized that whatever was there, she wasn't allowed to have.
Oh, that's brilliant. I have to give that a try.
Yeah.
I always thought it was funny because what she ate, the one time she ate was this brick of Monterey Jack jalapeno cheese.
Yes, that's good stuff.
It's good stuff. It is. I love it. But I was like, how is she not getting sick? And they're like, this is a spicy pepper, like
iron steel stomach. She's like, dang it, you know.
But she hasn't. I love the jalapeno poppers and stuff like that every now and then, you know, go for those kind of things.
Oh, let's do a podcast on food.
Next up, we're going to start. But yeah, it's just funny. So all these stuff like that, and she'll look at me, and I'm like, I'm not giving you this because I don't want you to get sick in the house. Get away! And then she ate my jalapeno cheddar.
Oh yeah,
or Monterey Jack. I mean, jalapeno Monterey Jack. So I'm like, was that revenge? Like, is she plotting against me?
Oh, dog. They're so rad.
I'm starting to think that this dog is smarter than what she, you know, what she's showing me.
Yeah, they're sneaky. But, you know, again, they self-reward. Yeah. And, you know, if you allow it and it continues, it becomes a habit where they can self-reward all they want. And in those certain areas, you know, Harper is a little bit of a counter surfer, not too bad. But anytime we see her counter surfing, we yell, you know, really loud, hey!
Yeah.
And then she's like, whoa! And then she gets all scared.
It's just the startle, enough to startle her to get down.
And there's nothing wrong, you know, there's nothing wrong with that to get her attention. And, you know, if I wanted to do formal training with her, I could simply use that cheese trick. But, you know, if we hear her rustling around and we go, hey, and she's like, oh, shoot, hi, I wasn't doing anything. She's like, I was doing nothing. I was just standing here.
Piper and Penny are both bad at the recycle bin in the office. For some reason, they like the recycle bin. I don't know. I can't keep them out of that. I put paper in there, like, you know, you get shipments, boxes or cardboard or whatever in there. And if I'm not paying attention to them and I'm working, that thing gets dumped and dragged around the room. So perfect. I don't know why. It's like, well, there's no food out. We were downstairs and look, there's no food on the counter. So we're going to get your attention somehow.
That's hilarious. And you know what? That's probably what it is. Like, I'll get your attention, or I'm bored and I need something to do. And when I do something, you know, they're not like us where they have rational thought. They're going to be like, well, I'll just do whatever I can to, you know, to entertain myself.
Exactly.
But another really good thing is, you know, the marrow bones that you can buy at Sobeys.
Yep.
Don't buy them at the pet store because they're 3 times the price and they're the same darn thing. But you can get like 3 or 4 of them in a package. Get the tall ones, the ones that have like a deep hole in them, and then you freeze them and then let them eat out the marrow, and then you reuse those bones. You can stuff them and you can put carrot and berries and, you know, yogurt and, you know, maybe some softened kibble, and
and you mix it up into a bit of a puree or whatever, because there's very, very, very little calories in that, especially with fruit and vegetables, and you throw it back in the freezer. You can even put some chicken broth to make it harder. Throw it back in the freezer and freeze it. And then when they're bored and they need a little bit of, and they need a little, they want to get into some mischief, you just pop these on their beds or on the floor or whatever, and let them go to town on them, because licking is self-soothing. Yeah. And then it also stimulates the brain on how do I get this out of here? And then it makes them tired from working through the bone.
I used to do something similar to that for Pixie. I've only done it for Penny once. I should try it for Piper. Is I would take the Kong, but I would always have to get a black Kong because she would chew apart the red ones. So I'd get the black Kong and I'd put either peanut butter, or I would freeze, like get some frozen, I'd freeze chicken broth or beef broth or something like that. And I'd put something in. If I did it, peanut butter, and then put a little bit of those liver treats, you know, the tiny training treats, and then another layer of peanut butter and then tiny training treats. Or if I do the frozen broth, you know, whatever, how I'd break it in there, put it in the freezer to let it refreeze, and then give it to Pixie, and I'd be gone for an hour, like while I was leaving her at home for like an hour to go get groceries or what. Because yeah. I never took her if it was too cold or too hot in the car. Otherwise, she came everywhere with me if it was okay temperature. But I'd leave her with that. And I remember coming home one day and she's still working on that. I was only gone for like 35 minutes or whatever. I'd gone to co-op and came home. She's still working on that. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And kept her busy. You know, this is something I had read on. Yeah. And she ran up the stairs carrying this Kong in her mouth. And I thought, oh, well, clearly she thinks I'm going to steal it from her because, you know, I'm sitting in the living room now and she's wants to keep it away. But she goes up to the top of the stairs at the top of the landing, and she bounced it down the stairs to get all the loose liver treats out.
Oh, that's smart.
I'm like, who taught you to do that?
Yeah, that's smart. Yeah, she's a forward thinker, that girl.
Yeah. And I have no idea to this day, like because she'd do that every now and then. I'm still to this day, like, I don't know where she picked that up. Obviously, something she figured out, or, you know, probably by accident, you know.
Yeah. She probably dropped it down the stairs and the treats came loose and she's like, dang, that worked.
Exactly. Then, yeah. It doesn't take me as long to get to the good ones.
Yeah. She sounds very smart. And what I love about the Kongs too, next to the marrow bones are usually pretty cylinder wise. You know, the hole is the same going all the way down, you know, so they empty out a little bit quicker. It's a less expensive idea than the Kongs, but the Kongs have that, you know, that wider mouth, and then it narrows down to the bottom. So they really got to work at that to get out every single corner. Or with Harper, she just leaves the bottom and goes and steals one of the other dogs. <'Cause she's> like, here's a spoiler. I don't feel like getting to the bottom of this one. So if you could just surrender yours, that would be great.
That's
Do you
hilarious.
Have any further questions?
I think that's all I have for this time. So we'll just have to book our next visit.
Yeah, that would be great.
So how about something really funny? Let's just say, if dogs could talk, what do you think they'd say about the training that they get from you?
I think if dogs could talk, they would probably say, this bitch is real.
I gotta listen to her. I'm
and
sure.
I use the bitch word loosely because they're female dogs, right?
I think they would
be super, super thankful. You know, it's funny because when I train dogs, I don't just train the dog. It's all about energy for me. And a lot of people say you're like the dog whisperer. And that's a great compliment for me because Susan Milan is one of my favorite people. And I took training from one of his dear friends. And, you know, so, you know, his methods they work. And energy is a big, big thing. And when I work with a dog, I work with the energy. And there's a lot of times where I just close my eyes and I just feel the leash and I feel the energy of the dog because I can read them so much better. And Christopher and I took on this foster dog when I got a little better from sickness this year. We took on this foster dog, Skye. She had a neuromuscular disorder and she was going to die.